I'm Logan Webb, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, July 17th, 2023, and this is episode 285 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the streaking San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today from the surface of the sun is Eric Nathanson. How you doing?
I'm doing good. That's exactly where I live. It says so in my Twitter bio now. I live on the sun. I've just come to accept that, so I'm not really complaining about that. I'm doing well. Giants are streaking. I've been watching World Series of Poker all the time lately. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of good times right now with the sports scene. You know, it's at least I have that stuff to do as I hide in the air conditioning away from the sun. You know, you go on the road, you seem to travel everywhere and miss the sun. Me, no, I'm just hiding in the air conditioning.
Yeah, I've been hiding from the sun. I was in Hawaii for a week and a half. It was nice there. We missed the heat wave here in the Bay Area. Then I was in San Diego for all week on work. Had a nice tour of Petco Park, by the way. And I have seen a game there before about 10 years ago. But if any of you have not been to Petco Park yet, go visit it, man. It's a nice, nice ballpark. I mean, it doesn't beat Oracle, but it's one of those nice, you know, retro ballparks with a lot of wide concourses, great food selection. That warehouse in left field is pretty dope. It's a great park. And then went to Lake Tahoe over the weekend, and again, it was hot there. It was like 90, 91, but it was basically 100 back at home. My daughter and I did go to that Edgewood tournament yesterday, actually, and we planted ourselves on the green on hole number 4, and we saw so many athletes and celebrities come through. It was just insane. You can look up the whole list, but, you know, all the NFL athletes, you know, John Elway and Tony Romo and Steve Young and Emmett Smith. It goes on and on and on. Of course, we wanted to see Steph Curry, and he did not disappoint from about 180 away with an iron. He just hits it, and the thing just goes stick, backspins 4 feet from the pin. The dude is like, he was money the entire tournament. I'm sure you guys saw the hole-in-one he hit the day before. And then, of course,
long-distance shooting. It's just in his blood.
Yeah, exactly. He could just do it, right? And then he had that long-distance eagle putt yesterday to win it on 18. Yep. And if he didn't hit that, he would have come in second. So the dude is on another level. Golf is one of those games, man, where I'm not good at it. But the psychological aspect, Eric, really does mess me up. It really messes me up because I'm seeing these, like, entertainers out there, like, you know, Larry the Cable Guy and a Miles Teller and a Ray Romano. And they could stand in a tee box with a bunch of people watching and hit a straight drive. They can hit it off the grass with an iron, hit it in the air. It may not be super accurate, but, you know, they're doing the right thing. Me, anytime I have anyone watching me, we're talking slice into the water or worm burners on the ground. Like, I top it. I just top it every time. And I'm like, I don't understand how these people do it. It's a psychological thing I cannot get over, but I commend Steph Curry and those guys, man. Amazing.
You're not an entertainer. Like, they're used to being in front of crowds in general in the first place. I mean, the only crowd you get is when you're feeding the fish. And so I guess maybe if you were golfing underwater, you might have a leg up on them. But since it is on ground, I can get why they don't sweat it.
Yeah. No, it's pretty funny. They're all going to laugh at me. They're all going to laugh at me. Whack. Oh, they're all laughing at me. Speaking of not laughing, though, the Giants, streaking again right out of the All-Star break. They, of course, took the last two against Colorado before the break and then just swept the Pirates in a three-game series. So they've won 5 in a row, and they're back up to their season high of 11 games over 500. But now they have leapfrogged over the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have lost 4 in a row. So they have sole possession of second place. They are now 52-41 and only a game and a half behind the first-place Dodgers. And that's only because the Dodgers won like 6 out of 7. You know, if the Dodgers were kind of like 5-2 or 4-3, the Giants might be in first place right now. So they got the fourth best record in the National League. I mean, things are looking pretty good right now, Eric.
Yeah, it's surprising to see Arizona just tank like they have. And the Giants taking advantage, beating teams that are not good in Colorado and Pittsburgh, doing what they're supposed to do. And you're right, the Dodgers won like six or seven straight before losing yesterday. So that's really the only thing that kept them out of first place during this little run they've started. And it's nice to see them bounce back, because you remember we talked about how they lost two out of three. And then to get them back on track against Colorado before the break, and, you know, like, what can we say about Logan Webb and what his performance before the break? That was unbelievable, that shutout. It was hard to believe it was his first ever complete game shutout, but it was a masterpiece. He kind of, like, shoved against the All-Star voters. He's like, oh, you think Alex Cobb is an All-Star? Like, I'm happy for him, but I'm the best pitcher on the Giants. And he went out and twirled that gem. I thought that was awesome.
I thought it was great. And it's obviously rare in the Farhan era to allow pitchers to go, you know, full nine. Obviously, Cap was like, yeah, he's fine. Not only that, like you said, he shoved. It was a 1-0 game, so that kind of makes it a little bit harder to allow the starter to go back out, right? But he struck out the side, dude. He struck out the side in the ninth. That was freaking so amazing. And you're right. I mean, sure, he's happy for Alex Cobb, who got named as a replacement, so the Giants actually had two guys go, but... That said, we were talking about him being a potential snub. And, you know, we weren't angry about it or upset about Logan Webb not going. It was the same thing last year. Like, Rodon went, and it really could have been Webb. He's been right on the cusp, I think, the last 2 years. And, in fact, after that complete game, you had a bunch of Bleacher Report, ESPN, and MLB, like, pitcher rankings. And Webb popped up on all of them at, like, number... 5-6 in the National League, right? Or number 10 overall in the majors. And you're like, yeah, people think he might be in the top 10 of pitchers in the league, but he's not on the All-Star team. It's a little weird, but you know, it's just, I think it was timing. That complete game shutout kind of raised everyone's eyebrows and said, huh, all right, yeah, he is pretty good.
Yeah, it was funny, too, because Cobb ends up throwing, you know, a shutout inning in the All-Star game, so everybody comes out looking good on something like this. It was the old Giants. It's what we've wanted to see from them. And, you know, Colorado beating up on a division team, that was nice. And I was worried the All-Star break would kill them. But then look at this weekend. I mean, that was kind of crazy. They I don't want to say they dominated Pittsburgh, but they took advantage of the right opportunities, and they're finally back. You said 11 games over 500 and taking advantage of Arizona. 5-game winning streak, longest in the National League right now. And holding the first wild card spot, I mean, it's not much, though. There's still like 4 or 5 teams behind them. I can't believe we're in this spot right now. We got the trade deadline coming up. You know, Webb and Cobb might get some help in the rotation, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Otani, I don't know. So, you know... It's been a good thing. It's just been they've been fun to watch. I missed a lot of this weekend, and I caught up through, you know, highlights and stuff. And, you know, Conforto stuck out to me. Bailey stuck out to me. You know, it's been nice. I feel like everybody is doing something that's worthy of talking about lately.
Yeah, Bailey has been obviously the big surprise. He has been consistent, and he stayed at that high level as opposed to Schmidt. Who obviously we talked about last time, right? He's severely dropped off, and he needs to figure it out and kind of readjust to the league's adjustment to him by not chasing and all that stuff like that. But Bailey has been the highest rated catcher in terms of WAR since his call up. I mean, that how you can't get any better than that, Eric. Like, that's right. Like amazing, you know. Rookie comes up and he's like, yeah, you know what? I'll be Buster Posey. Okay, cool. Thanks, man. We appreciate that. He's been nailing runners at a high clip, like 38%. The pitching staff just absolutely trusts him. He's coming up with big hits again, like he did in Pittsburgh here with the double. He's just, man, he is a stud. He looks like he's going to be here to stay. You know, we'll see about Schmidt. He has an opportunity with the Estrada injury to hang around, but he's got to really pick it up in order to make that argument stick. But right. Yeah, this is great. And, you know, like you said, the wild card pack is pretty tight right now. They do have a percentage point lead over Miami, but essentially they're tied for the number one spot. And then behind that, you have Arizona at a half game back and then a game ahead of Philly. And behind that, you have like Cincinnati at 2 games behind or 2.5 behind the Giants. So, I mean, you got 5+ teams just vying for those 3 positions. So there is no gimme. There is no guarantee. And a series like coming into Cincinnati this weekend or this week is big. It's a 4-game series and it could really shake up the wild card situation. So by no means are Eric and I thinking like, oh, they're going to cruise on to get a playoff spot here. Not at all. They have a lot of work to do, but that
the,
said,
the playoff odds are good, aren't they? Like,
yeah, I think they're above 60% now. Yeah.
78.1 to make the postseason, according to Baseball Reference, and 4.3 to win it all. I don't know about having a 4% chance to win it all, but I'll take almost 80% odds to get into the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah, so they keep improving. I know that at the break they were like 58 point something, but you go on a little winning streak like this, and Arizona loses 4 in a row, that'll change the percentages a little bit. Things are looking great right now, and you know they have a very long their longest road trip of the year, as you mentioned last time. But it's nice to start 3-0. There's nothing wrong with that. But they got Cincinnati and Washington coming up, and that weird makeup next Monday in Detroit, but. Before we get to some of the, help that they need, I guess you could say, in the trade deadline, which we still have some time to discuss in the future, we did also have the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. And so the Home Run Derby, I think, continues to be one of those really nice, you know, moments that fans can kind of dwell on. I think they've made it, they've developed it to... kind of a very fast experience. I mean, it used to really drag on for like 4 or 5 hours, but now it's pretty fast. And you know, I'm entertained, but I do the same thing as you. I kind of wait to start watching it, and then I can skip all the commercials and kind of fast forward through a lot of the talking. And I just watch the meat of the Derby, which is, you know, it's like 2 minutes per round, 2.5 minutes per round, or whatever. So that's a much more enjoyable way to watch it. But you know, Julio Rodriguez put on a show, setting the all-time record with 41 bombs in a round, but you know, you had Vlad Jr., of course, winning it all. But, I mean, did anything surprise you? I think I'll say what surprised me. It's not that it wasn't predicted. I thought Mookie Betts would still do better. I knew he wasn't going to win the first round. I just thought he was going to do better. But, you know, for a guy who's got 20-something bombs in the first half, he's short, you know. He's 5'10". He's like my height. Obviously thinner. Yeah. But definitely stronger than me. He can't compete with those big boys, man. And he certainly couldn't get the 2 extra 440 home runs to get the extra 30 seconds, which is a huge advantage. So I think that surprised how poorly he did. But I mean, other than that, maybe Pete Alonso losing, but you know, that was a tough one.
Well, Mookie, I mean, he's not really a quote power hitter. You know what I mean?
No.
He's like a drive hitter. And some of those drives have just carried a little farther this year to get out. You know, not that he's hitting wall scrapers, but you're right. Mookie's shots are not going 450, 460. So, I mean, I kind of get why he would be drowned out by the other guys. The Rodriguez thing, I mean, Seattle, the whole backdrop of having their guy have a round like that, that made it a lot of fun. That gave a nice little hometown twist to it. You always like when the guy whose stadium it is performs well. And so we got that along with what seemed like a worthy champion. Vlad really did put on a show. He got into some balls real well and got into some rhythms. There was one guy, Arozarena, the rhythms he got into were just phenomenal sometimes. Like every pitch just looked like a beach ball for like 5, 6, 7 in a row. And then he, you know, hit one that didn't go and it would kill that. But it was fun to watch him hit too. I thought he was a lot of fun for that. But, Alonso, what are you going to do? The guy tries to win it every year, and I think he'll just keep coming back. I think it's just going to be his thing, you know?
Yeah, he loves it, so.
Yeah, he's just going to keep trying to be that guy, and, you know, some years he'll lose, some years he'll win. It's like Larry Bird in the three-point contest.
Yeah, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr., of course, has 3 Derby championships, and Alonso definitely wants to at least tie him. If not, you know, get ahead. So I agree. I mean, he takes pride in it. So we'll see Alonso back in it pretty much every year. It's almost like he's got the Masters green jacket, right? And so they'll just allow him to come back every year. But yeah, yeah.
You want to hit again this year? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come on, let's go. Andy Rutschman, he put on a show too. I mean, he would have won almost against anyone else in that first round. But, you know, he was victim of kind of seating and how that works out. So that was kind of unfortunate for
him.
Well, that's
how it always plays out, though, right? There's always like one round that's just phenomenal where a couple guys put on a great battle. And, you know, the final doesn't always end up that way. But there's usually one that has to go to a swing off or, you know, in this case, yeah. You know, one guy puts on a show, but the other guy, you know, hits 41 instead. So there's always that one round that sticks. I can still remember Josh Hamilton going nuts at Yankee Stadium in 2008. So,
yeah,
you know, and he didn't win the thing. So that's what's fun about these is you remember just the fun times, not even exactly. Necessarily who won. But Vlad's fun. I like Vlad Jr.
Oh, I do too. I just, those guys get so tired by that last round. You just see it. Yeah. They're just like, they're taking literally a couple hundred swings, I mean, during the event. And that is very taxing. For people don't think that that affects your cardio and you don't get fatigued from that. Oh, man. You remember going in the batting cage and just hitting, I don't know, 20, 30 balls in a row? You're just like, okay. I got to take a break. You know? And these guys are swinging harder than I could even imagine.
Right.
But, no, that was a lot of fun. But about the game itself, you know, pulling for the National League, even though it really doesn't matter anymore, there's nothing to play for in terms of home field advantage, which is a stupid thing anyway. So I'm glad they reverted. But the National League, with a late two-run bomb by the Rockies catcher.
Okay. What is his name? Propelled Diaz?
Diaz. Propelled him to a 3-2 victory. Of course, Camilo Duvall and Alex Cobb each pitched one inning of shutout ball. Each Camilo just looked – I know he allowed a hit, but he just looked silly against some of those guys. I mean, he was throwing 101 high heaters, you know, with his slider, and he just made guys look silly. But he actually ended up getting credited for the win. And, of course, that was the first win since 2014 in which Melky Cabrera won the MVP and Matt Cain got the victory that
2012.
Yeah. Was that 2012? I thought that was 20. You're right. Yeah. You're right. It was 2012. So anyway, it was just one of those things. It was so funny to see that. You know, it's like, okay, I guess Giants should pitch in All-Star games if they want to win. But, you know, that was cool to see.
Yeah, it's always fun to see. Camilo, that was what I wanted to see, was Camilo against, you know, All-Stars. And, yeah, he just kind of – he goes up there, he does this thing. I love how cool Camilo is, you know. He knew he was the star without having to act too outlandish in any way. So it was nice to see him just go there and hump it up at 101 and make them swing at it.
Yeah, no, that was good. And that guy really does have ice in his veins. I mean, I've been listening to more and more player interviews, and they're talking about how I think it was Alex Cobb, and he was just like, the dude doesn't get up for anything. Like, he appreciates everything, but he just, you can't read him. He's like, he'll smile every once in a while, but other than that, he just plays it the same no matter what. So, you know, yeah, he's a cool cat. He's a good guy to have on the team right now. Even, you know, on occasion he's going to give up four runs like he did before the break, but, you know, shit happens sometimes.
Right. Killed me in fantasy. Right. Damn. Dude.
So moving on, there's been a lot of buzz since the All-Star break, really, about approaching the trade deadline. And, of course, the biggest potential fish out there is Shohei Ohtani. Now, we went through this exercise last year in which a lot of people were thinking – Artie Moreno, who is the owner of the Angels, could really get a lot for Ohtani. That's the Italian two-way player. Ohtani. Hey, Ohtani. hey, Ohtani. Oh, there's a skit in there somewhere, Eric.
Yep.
Now, they could get a lot for Ohtani last year because he was a year and a half rental. This year, you got 2 months of him, right? And no guarantee to sign him next year. And so it's going to be interesting because, you know, obviously the Dodgers are one of the teams listed, but a former Dodger himself, and I think it's just bait and it's things to talk about, so I'm not leading any credence to this. Eric Karros does not have a pipeline to Artie Moreno's phone. He doesn't know anything, but I thought it was an interesting reaction to what he thought Ohtani was going to go to. So I'm going to play a clip right now from Fox Sports. That's right. It's Fox Sports MLB.
Not talking the Angels. The question is, will Shohei Ohtani play in the postseason this year?
He's going to play in the postseason. He has to play in the postseason. The Angels need to trade him. If they don't, they're doing a disservice to the organization. Now, you want me to take it a next step further? Who's he going to be playing for? He's going to be playing for the Giants.
Whoa.
That's who he's going to be playing
for. Oh,
Mr. Dodger?
No, I'm just telling you, that makes all the sense in the world. They have the wherewithal to do it. Then they get him for a couple months to try to court him so they could sign him for a free agency. It makes all the sense. And you don't think that the Angels wouldn't want to trade him to San Francisco to spite the Dodgers? Come on. This is drama.
Wow.
So there you go. You know, the ex-Dodger saying that the Angels would trade him to San Francisco because it would just be to spite the Dodgers. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Artie Moreno is kind of a egotistical person, so I guess I could see that angle. But they're going to listen to the best offers, man. You know, if the Dodgers are able to flood their system with prospects, how could they say no to that? And I think that's the, I think that's the flip side of this is, you know, we obviously pursued Judge and Correa, and they were big, big, big fish, and we didn't land them for various reasons. So far, by the way, on a side note, glad we didn't get either one of them, because look what's happened to both of them this year, which is the exact problem with signing these big guys, is that when they get hurt or underperform, you're stuck with the bill, man, and that's just the way it is. Shohei Ohtani, I think, is a unicorn. He is different. He has been healthy his whole career, and he's having a season to of all seasons this year. So I'm not too worried about his, you know, he doesn't have an injury history per se. Yeah, he could get injured, but that's a freak thing. But the amount that the Giants would have to give up for a two-month rental and to just have the chance to court him to sign him long-term, I just don't know. I just don't know. And I'm wondering if the Angels think they can get so much for Shohei, they're just going to wait for some ridiculous proposal that may never come. And then it's like this, you know, this cat and mouse game where then maybe other teams are going to go back to themselves and think, you know what, we're not going to give up what the Angels want. I don't think any other team's going to give up what the Angels want. So we're just going to sit tight and let him become a free agent and then go at him, you know? So I don't know how it's going to play out. I do think a crazy team like the Yankees or, you know, someone who overpays all the time, like the Padres, they're going to make a last second effort and like trade everyone, right, to get Ohtani. Like they did with Judge. I would love for the Giants to get him because I think that would do wonders for marketing and ticket sales and all of those things. But the Giants' success lately has been based on kind of next man up. And if they have to give up their entire farm system for one dude, it's hard. It's hard. I'm not saying it's not justifiable. It's just hard.
Oh, it's justifiable to me. I would take it in a heartbeat. I don't care. Unload the farm. Get him in the door. Get in the playoffs. Show him what it's like to be on a winning team. And give him that taste of, you know, the American Asian Pacific Islander, you know, community would embrace him. Asian Americans would embrace him. It would be such a big San Francisco get. Seattle's already got Ichiro with that locked up with the Japanese market. So get Ohtani in a new place, in a place where he can hit bombs into water all the time. Yeah. I mean, he'd have like 10 splash hits a year. And he's a guy who would also left-handed, you know, put it out to left field 5-10 times at Oracle Park. Like, I would unload for him. I would do the full sell. I just don't know if Farhan's willing to do that. And we're at, you know, it comes at a good time for the Giants, just in the sense that Farhan's at a nexus right now. You know, he's got to make some moves. He's got to show some stones that, you know, the plan he's got going on is developing and making sense. And if that plan is to just use some of those pieces to go for Ohtani, I think that's just how it ends up. But, you know, to bring it all back to Eric Karros, like, nobody prompted him. Nobody asked him where they thought he was going to go. He just decided to start talking about Ohtani to the Giants, which was just very fascinating to me. Like, did he hear something from somebody, or was he just in the shower before he came out? And he was like, you know, this would be good to say.
I don't know if he just did it because he wanted to get some buzz, or like you said, maybe he heard something and he just doesn't want to report that. But he's like, if I'm going to take it a step further, because you're right, he was not prompted to do that.
Right, he wasn't at all. And so I wonder, like, did he talk to people in the Dodgers and that's what they're saying? So that's why he said that? Is he being a mouthpiece for the Dodgers? You know, it's just that kind of thought and wonder about it. It's great to discuss, though. We got 2 weeks until the trade deadline. And the mere fact that we're talking about Ohtani as a trade possibility is fun. You know, he is the greatest player in baseball. Fun. Yeah, he is number one, the best, no question about it. Mike Trout was, Ohtani is. He is the unicorn of all time. And it's just, it'd be amazing if he could be a Giant. I would take it in a heartbeat. I think there'd be enough next man up, because we're not going to lose like certain guys like Yaz and JD Davis and you know, Lamont. I don't see them losing guys like that, but could they lose, no, you know, Matos and some of the farm system? Yeah, that's the realistic thing. So like you said, for that's sure, what you have to weigh. And, you know, hopefully if the Giants are presented with that opportunity, they don't overpay. But, you know, who knows at this point? Who really knows? So, yeah, it's great to dream for that.
He really is, I mean, more than a unicorn. He is better than Babe Ruth. I mean, that's what we're getting to. That's the level that he is at. He is on pace to potentially break the AL home run record this year. He's on pace for 60 right now. So he could challenge what Aaron Judge just set last year, right? And then he's one of the top, you know, 10, 15 pitchers in the American League right now. So you put those two together, and he really is two players in one. So if you want to throw 50 million at him, 60 million at him,
60, I mean, yeah,
you think about it, that's like, well, that's 30 per player. It's not the worst deal in the world. And then the amount of, I mean, they have all the brain guys, you know, marketing people who crunch numbers, and they know, you know, once, if they were to sign Ohtani, what that means for like sellouts and gear and everything else, right? I mean, they're going to make his salary back, you know, 2-3-4-fold on that stuff. Not only that, but you're going to get better TV revenue. I know they split it, but they're going to get higher percentages. They're going to get more premier game times. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on and on and on, right? Like the trickle-down effect is pretty, pretty large. And so I agree with you. I think financially it's a no-brainer. I don't want them to ever get stuck in a situation where they are like the Angels, where they have an Ohtani and they just can't go anywhere because they gave up all their talent. You know, that said, right, Farhan is usually pretty good at reloading, you know? And speaking of reloading, they had their draft over the All-Star break. And I think we need to talk about that because, you know, right now there's a couple of sites, and I'm just going to highlight one of them. Bleacher Report gives them an A+, but I've read a lot of other ones because I'm not smart enough to give them a grade. Probably these people right, aren't either. They're just subjective material. But most people are giving the Giants a really high grade in this year's draft. And so I thought we could just talk about the top couple of guys that they took. And on the subject of Ohtani, they drafted at number 16 in round one, whom they call, everyone's been calling, the American Ohtani. And that is first baseman / right-handed pitcher Bryce Eldridge from James Madison High School. He's 6'7". He's a really strong kid. His sinker has reached the mid-90s. He's got a good feel of slider and changeup along a fairly consistent ability to throw strikes. At the plate, he has massive power potential. He's also flashed good defensive skills at first base. And most people say if he were solely a pitcher or hitter, he still probably would have been drafted in the top two rounds. So you're getting a guy who's good from both sides of the plate. And I don't know. I mean, that's pretty exciting because they did this last year I'm blanking out his name. He was just promoted from San Jose to Eugene.
Reggie Crawford.
Thank you. Yeah, he was just promoted as well. So he's been doing well at San Jose. So he's starting to move up the ranks. This is interesting. 2 years in a row with their first pick, they've taken two-way players. What do you make out of it?
It's funny because it almost flies in the opposite direction of the idea of going after Ohtani and makes you think that the Giants themselves are trying to develop their own Ohtani. So
they're going to have all nine positions be two-way players.
I mean, that would be Farhan's dream, right? And then it could just interchange everybody.
That'd be awesome.
Bullpen? What bullpen? I'm just going to my left fielder. I mean, yeah, that would be his absolute dream. You know, I just find it interesting that that's what they're doing. You know, it's fun, I mean, as Giants fans, but I don't know if I want to double down. I'm not trying to be funny. I don't know if I want to double down because you really don't know what's coming. And to go for two draft picks like that in a row, I mean, the odds of one of them turning into something have got to be high. So, I mean, that's the question. Is it just like throw as many against the wall and see one of them that sticks? Or, you know, do we think that we have a knack for doing this? So we're going to learn if these are worthy of that. It's just, it's interesting that they do that. Farhan, I mean, who knows what he's thinking?
In the second round, 52nd overall, I'm going to read the evaluation here from Sports Illustrated, is a shortstop, Walker Martin from Eaton High School in Colorado. say that Martin put up video game numbers, a standout in last year's yep. area code games. Martin posted video game numbers this year, and he led all the high schoolers in the entire nation with 20 home runs with a mind-boggling 633 average and a 28.7 walk rate. Even though he's shown plenty of power this year, Martin's also known for his bat-to-ball ability and a sweet lefty swing that grades out as average or better. With a projectable frame that he could potentially give him above-average raw power, Martin has a well-rounded skill set at the batter's box. I don't know what kind of league the Eaton High School plays in, but 20 home runs with a 633 average, that's insane.
That is totally insane.
Holy
I mean,
crap.
Imagine how much better he was than everybody else on the field. His team scored double digits in every game but two. It's absolutely ridiculous what he did in his high school. 20 home runs in like 29 games or some crap like that. 74 RBI or something. That's just ridiculous. And it's weird. The Giants went high school, the first two picks when they've been really focusing on college kids the last few years. But, you know, Walker Martin, I mean, obviously he's not going to put up numbers like that anywhere else, but just he must have been so much better than everybody else on the field every game he played. I can't imagine watching that guy. What a freak.
Yeah, he's just one of those kids where, you know, back in high school, you look at that one dude. And, of course, that one dude never even made the majors. But you're looking at him just going, yeah, he should be two levels above us right now. Like, he is just stupid. Sounds like that's what he was, too. So, the Giants' third pick, 69th overall, was a compensatory pick. They got left-handed pitcher Joe Whitman from Kent State. 85th pick, they got shortstop Cole Foster from Auburn. In round 4, 117th overall, shortstop Maui Ahuna from Tennessee. Round 5, 153rd overall, second baseman Quinn McDaniel from Maine. Round 6, 180th overall, catcher Luke, Luke Schlager from Maryland. Seventh round, outfielder Scott Bandura from Princeton. A little Ivy League action going on there. Eighth pick was right-handed pitcher Josh Bostick from Grayson Junior College in Texas. Ninth round pick was third baseman Charlie Sicconi, or I don't even know how to pronounce it. I heard it once, from University of Illinois, Chicago. And then their 10th pick, which I'll stop there, 300th overall, was right-handed pitcher Ryan Vanderhyde from TCU. So it was interesting to see them go high schoolers, the first couple of guys.
And then college.
They kind of went more traditional, yeah. So, but, you know, I think when they talk to these kids, because you hear about these high school kids that get drafted and they say, no, thank you, and they opt for, you know, college. Those are usually guys that are drafted in the later rounds when they know that, well, I'm not really going to get a big signing bonus here. I'm going to really have to work my tail off. I'd rather start in college and see what if I can improve my draft stock, you know, and have a good college experience, get a degree. But when you're a high schooler getting drafted in the first or second round, I mean, a lot of them, they take the money. They're like, you know, these signing bonuses are huge. They could get injured and not ever get drafted again. So, and I know the Giants and all these teams who draft high schoolers have these conversations with these players because they don't want to waste a pick on a guy who's going to, you know, a month later go, nah, on second thought, I'm going to go to college. So they kind of have a good idea about this. So I know the Giants have signed a few of these guys. I don't have that list in front of me, but pretty certain that these guys will stick around.
Yeah, it's fun. Walker Martin, I mean, if he goes to Eugene and does this stuff, hell, wow. Poof. But yeah, it was telling that everything else was college again. And then I kept looking down the list. The only other non-college pick they had was the 13th round, somebody from Leadership Christian Academy in Puerto Rico. So that's a high school as well. But everything else was a college kid again. So the right. Giants really do work at signability and stuff like that. But they're more willing to take a flyer on Eldridge and Martin. And, you know, it's a good strategy. Zaini, his picks are starting to shake out right now through the Giants organization. So it's just another new crop to insert and see what they do. And they drafted like three shortstops in their first five picks, which is interesting. But, I mean, shortstops can be converted to anything. We know those guys can become center fielders or catchers.
So. Usually some of the best athletes, and they're very flexible. So, yeah, they can easily go to the corner or second base.
Well, I kind of like that. Yeah, I like that angle that they're taking by taking just athletes. I kind of do like that. They're going to try to mold people in the minors, it seems.
Yeah, it's interesting. Their very last pick in round 20, 600th overall, they took another kid from Princeton, another outfielder, Nadir Lewis. So I guess those two teammates are like, hey, we're both on the Giants now. It's kind of an odd thing, but they must have had a reason for it. But anyway, so I think, you know, pretty good draft for the Giants. They got some exciting players. There's no doubt about that. It's not as heavy on the pitching side, which you've seen in years past. But I think that's a good thing because the Giants offense has, you know, been middle of the pack the last few years. Their starting pitching has been pretty good. So I think there's a little bit of a shift to try and get those guys. Of course, you have two-way players now in the system. And we'll see what happens with that. But I don't know. Do you feel pretty good about the draft overall?
I do. I feel decent about the direction of the club. I, in April, was screaming, I don't see a direction for this baseball team. And here I am 2.5, 3 months later. And I actually kind of do. So, you know, the draft made sense to me more than anything else.
Well, look, we're fans, right? This podcast is a podcast about the Giants by fans for fans, right? We've always touted that. We're the longest lasting, you know, Giants podcast out there since 2011, the longest one that's still going. And I know we may not be the most popular because we don't work for NBC and we don't have Alex Pavlovic or Cole Kuiper or any of these guys on. And they do a fantastic job. They just got They just got the marketing tools, right, to get their stuff out there. But what I will say is that, you know, hey, look, we're fans just like everybody else. And I think we're a little bit more pragmatic than your average fan for sure when you see social media. My God. But there are times that, yeah, we get really down. And you're right. Just a couple of months ago, 3 months ago, we were pretty down on this team. So much so we even got a couple of comments going, dang you, Debbie Downers. Like, what the hell? So we are definitely not folly to this. We are subject to this. But it's a pretty good testament to Farhan and Kapler and the organization to turn our feelings around about this team in a fairly short amount of time. So they had a really bad April. And when you look back on it, that's all they had. One bad month. We just thought that was going to be the forecast for the next few months. And thankfully, we were wrong about that.
Yeah, you're right about that, because May 17 and 12, June 18 and 8, July is now at 6-5, thanks to the five-game winning streak. Because July was starting to look like April there for a minute.
Yeah.
But they were a completely different team in April than they are now. You know, Lamont Wade hadn't fully gotten his feet under him. You know, we think of Tyro was their best player because that's the stretch he actually performed the best in, but they happened to be losing because nobody else was doing anything. So it is nice as fans to have that turnaround and finally trust some things. I don't necessarily still trust Gabe Kapler in every situation, but I will say he's done a great job deploying the bullpen. He really has. Beck has settled into his role beautifully. The way he handled them yesterday with Wood and Beck and handling the load was fantastic. You know, the bullpen games seem inevitable, and he's picked the right pieces to navigate those games and take those opportunities for the Giants. So, you know, I have to say, when the bullpen does well, I'm going to give Gabe a little credit at his choices that day. So, you know, they've turned me around. I've some trust. You know, going forward, I'm not scared. I'm positive.
Yeah, and this isn't, you know, I don't think this is a flash in the pan again. I know 2021, everyone says that was an aberration and an anomaly because look at what happened in 2022. Yeah, last year for a long season, they were, you know, exactly 500. This year, April started out really poorly. However, you look at their record since May 1st, after that horrible April, they have the second best record in the majors, Eric. And so that's over a duration of May, June, and, you know, half of July. So we're talking almost half a season here. They've had the second best record in the majors. And I don't think you can, you know, scoff at that and say, oh, another anomaly, like a lot of fans do. I mean, there is some consistency in this. So, you know, as long as they don't fall flat on their face for the rest of this month or all of August, you know, this team is projected to have a really good chance of making the playoffs. And so, you know, it's turned my attitude around, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing what they have to. Like, they took 2 of 3 from the White Sox. Just here's some examples of bad teams that they did well against. 2 of 3 against the White Sox. 5-2 against Milwaukee. Okay, that's not a bad team. 2-1 against the Twins. So-so team. 3-0 against Philly, who they're fighting against. 4-2 against Pittsburgh. And 6-1 against St. Louis. So they've been beating up on teams that they should beat up on for the most part. And that's been helping them. It doesn't hurt that they're 4-2 against the Dodgers, too. It would be a lot of fun if it comes down to that again this year. I don't want to deal with some wild card or NLDS, but I'd love to at least see the division come down to the wire. That would be a lot of fun, you know. If Arizona decides to just keep tanking, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's going to stay a three-team race, and the Giants are definitely in the thick of it. I mean, they're doing what they have to do, and now they got four in Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a launching pad. It's going to be warm. It's going to be breezy the next few days. I looked at it. You know, we talked about it. This road trip is going to set the tone, and if they keep chugging along the way they have, you know, I don't see why they won't be buyers at the deadline and fighting for at least the division. They're never going to catch the top spot in the National League. I mean, Atlanta's just kind of running away with that right now.
Oh, yeah. Atlanta's got to fall on their face for the Giants or anyone to have any chance of getting that number one spot. But that's okay. Number two is good. You mentioned the Dodgers, and what's funny about that is, you know, the Giants don't play them for quite some time, but at least they end the season by playing seven of their last 10 games against the Dodgers. They got a four-game set in L.A., three games at home against the Padres, and then three games home against the Dodgers, even though they have fewer games this year, right? Instead of 19 in the unbalanced schedule, they have 14 with the balanced schedule, which I actually do like a little bit more because they see more of the other teams more often. I know there are arguments to keep it unbalanced as well for your division. I get it. But there's some wild card implications that I think it makes it a little bit more fair if you have a little bit more of a balanced schedule. Next year, however, they already released the schedule. We won't go into depth right now, but I will note that I believe the Giants and Dodgers are done playing by like the end of June or early July is what I was reading for next year. And if that's true, that's, I'm sorry, that's not the way it should be. I don't like that at all.
It's crazy.
You know, I really don't. So that's maybe an unfortunate fallout from this unbalanced schedule and trying to get travel because, you know, with the American League teams, you know, they trade off every year. One comes here, the next year we go there, that kind of thing. So it probably had to do with the travel schedule, but it is what it is. All right, so Giants, trade deadline, August 1st. That's 2 weeks from today. We're definitely going to record next week. Well, we'll talk offline, but presumably we'll try and record next Monday, probably during the Giants-Tigers makeup there, out there. If not, we'll let you know. And then the show after that is the deadline. So it's going to be really interesting, Eric, to see how these next 2 weeks kind of shape up. I'm really excited about it. I don't think it depends too much on the Giants' performance. I think even if they go into a losing streak, they're still going to be, you know, in striking distance of the wild card. So I don't think anything is going to change in that regard. They're not going to be sellers. They most likely will be buyers, and they should be buyers. It just matters of... you know, who are they going to go shopping for besides, of course, our dream of Ohtani, right? But again, we're probably going to have to settle for some middle relief, you know, and some like fifth starter or something, another utility infielder. But, you know, all these little parts do pay dividends in the long run.
I still think they'll stay on a tear, though, leading up to this. I mean, you split with Cincinnati, you take two or three from Washington, you snap off that Detroit game if you can. Then you got Oakland for two games. And Oakland, I mean, they just suck. They literally
the worst team in
suck. Yeah.
They may be the worst team in Major League history.
Or something already. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They're on pace for 120 losses right now.
So bad. That's the Tigers from 06. No, not 06. 03, 02, whatever. But then they face, you know, Oakland, and then Boston comes to town, and then it's the deadline when Arizona comes to town. So they really have a favorable schedule to look like strong contenders right here at the deadline. So I do think they're not even going to slip up. I don't even think we're going to have to worry about that. Like I really can see the Giants taking three or four in Cincinnati and two or three in Washington and just keep rolling. So, I mean, it's like you said, it's going to be fun. We need some pitching help, though. That is the one thing. They need some starting pitching help if they can get one more starter. But, you know, we'll talk about that next week, see where they're at. If they go 0-7 between now and then, you know, who knows where they're at. But Giolito's out there. You know, they've talked about Tim Anderson from middle. There's a lot of rumors to get to. So we'll give it one more week, and then we'll kind of start roasting on that.
Exactly, as things start crystallizing. Well, in that case, as we wrap up 285 here, you guys have kind of gotten Coffee in the Cove going again. And Giants Chatter, anything you want to say about those things?
Yeah, Coffee in the Cove will be live the next 2 weeks. We'll be 9:30 on Sunday. And the week after that, it'll be probably noon because I think they're finally back at home. So stay tuned for that because Giants Chatter, same thing. We'll be ramping it up with the trade deadline.
And one of your fellow co-authors the other day wrote the game summary for one of the Pirates-Giants games, and the headline was Giants Pound the Booty. So I just want to say I appreciate those kind of
leads.
Shout out, Say Hey Rob. Say Hey Rob is killing it with the recaps this year, and it is definitely all him.
Yeah, I want to see that posted on the top of the Sporting Green in the Chronicle. That'd be great. Giants pounding right. booty. Probably not going to happen.
Susan, so. I mean, I was going to say, you're not going to see Susan Slusser on the byline there. I mean, not even Hank would have done that back in the day.
But I do appreciate it. It's very good. Yep. So anyway, yeah, if you haven't joined or read Giants Chatter, please do so. I actually still read those all the time, especially on all this travel. I can't watch the games, so certainly I'll look at highlights, but I like reading these guys because they're watching the games closely, and so it's a lot of fun. So check them out. Of course, check us out on all the socials. We are now on what's that new site called?
Threads.
Threads. We're on Threads. Oh my God, my brain is unraveling. The thread, I was pulling a thread right there. Yeah, we're on Threads right now. It seems like a pretty good community so far, pretty safe. I'm sure the toxicity will develop fairly soon, but right now it's pretty safe. So follow us over there. We're still active on Twitter, of course. Follow us at TortureCast, both sites, and of course Facebook. Like us there. Find everything on our main website at torturecast.com. Eric, you got anything else for our listeners?
Nope, not at all. Giants are streaking. Go watch the World Series of Poker. It's down to three, and I think Adam Walton's going to win it all.
Okay, actually, I need to tune in. I have not, but I did. It was a couple months ago. I taught my 13-year-old poker while we were camping, and so when we were in Tahoe this weekend, he's like, "Dad, let's play some poker." I was like, "Yeah." So I sat down.
That's when you learn.
And then I know, exactly. So we got the chips
out. That's
how
my dad
taught
me. We were camping. My dad brought out the cards. Same thing.
Yeah, and you know, he thought it was really hard to grasp at first, but now he's getting it. And so my daughter, who she tried it at like 5 years ago, but now she's, you know, she's going to Berkeley, so I think her mind can handle the concepts now. So she sat down and she kind of learned on the fly. And then our friend's daughter, who is my son's age, she's 13, also sat down. So suddenly we had four of us playing poker. And so I was kind of, you know, aside from having the list of hands out that they had on their phone to make sure which one was higher, like a three of a kind or two pair kind of situation, you know, I was letting them know in situations, trying to teach them, like, if you see this flop, you know that someone could have a flush. Or if you see this flop, you know that a flush is mathematically improbable until the turn. And then you can see if it's, you know, impossible, you know, and I'm trying to give them a little pointers here and there. And I am by no means an expert poker player, as you know, Eric. But I was just trying to impart some of the knowledge there, and same with the art of bluffing, where, you know, giving them examples and recommendations, because my son came out and he bluffed every hand. And so it was like, you can't bluff every hand, guys, because that's what happens. You lose your money.
You'll get caught. People have things. Yeah,
there's a subtle art. But you also can't ever not bluff, because then everybody will peg you as being just super safety guy. And if you bet, you always have something. So, you know, there's a lot of gray area in poker. It's a lot of fun to learn. And you'll meet people that frustrate you. You'll meet people that will get that 1% card on the river. You'll have the second best hand and you'll lose. It just happens. So poker is definitely a game of patience.
I think the fun part about being a teenager, a young teenager learning the game, is you found a game that you're permitted to lie during. And I think that was like, for me, it was like, hey, I get to lie and there's no consequences. That's kind of cool. So, you know, I kind of get why Noah went the direction of bluffing all the time, because I went that direction too when I started. That's great, though. That's a great way to learn. It was, I had the exact same thing. Camping with my dad. We're on a retreat with, you know, father-son retreat with other father-sons in a Indian guides thing that I was in growing up. And that's when I learned. So that's a great thing. Hopefully he'll remember that forever.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so awesome. All right, well, that'll do it for episode 285. We'll be back next week for episode 286. In the meantime, the Giants, of course, have four in Cincinnati starting this afternoon and then three in Washington. So until then, for Eric, this is Chad signing off. Have a great week and go Giants. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.